Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Here's Kane now over the red wing line, right wing to a wide open tee, left circle, fires, he scores! There's a shot by Nylander, he scores! Behind the net to Tasty, shoots and scores! Doubling back, Duncan Key, still got the jump, to a wide open tee, left circle, fires, he scores!
It's time for another episode of Blackhawks Crazy.
There goes the goaltender, Franzreb. Oh, and he shouldn't have left the net. David Kemp with a loose puck fires it down toward the empty net. He scores! Red wing line on the right wing. Bats it down behind the net. Bounces out to Kane. He shoots, he scores!
Chris Bowden and Scott King break down the latest storylines surrounding your favorite Chicago hockey team.
Jonathan Kane into the top shelf.
Now, here they are, Chris Bowden and Scott King.
Hi again, everyone. We don't have a game to talk about, another game to talk about. Thankfully, we'll be able to do that after Thursday's game and Saturday's game and Monday's game, which will be our next podcast. Games come fast and furious over the course of the next 5 days. Three games in all, including the home opener. But we're recording here after Wednesday afternoon's practice from Fifth Third Arena and getting ready for the San Jose Sharks to take the ice as well. And, Scott, I guess we should start there because this home opener with the red carpet and the pomp and circumstance and whatnot is going to be fun. I think these guys are desperate to take the ice once again since it's been 6 days and a transcontinental trip as well. But Tuesday night, though, San Jose Sharks fell to 0-4 in Nashville. They've had trouble scoring goals, 5 goals in 4 games. The losses that they've had personnel-wise, Joe Pavelski and a couple of the depth guys, Jonas Donskoy, Justin Brown, he's not there anymore. They got Evander Kane back from a suspension. But they're going to be coming in a bad mood, and whether Patrick Marleau suits up for them or not, that's one thing to keep in mind here, because teams have a tendency to get a little bit sluggish after a long trip and a long time off, and I think that's the thing the Blackhawks were talking in the locker room after practice they have to safeguard against.
Yeah, I think the Hawks know they're a great team, and they're going to be hungry losing the first four of the season. You know, you're talking about a team that went to the Western Conference Final and lost to the Stanley Cup champion Blues. So a good team. They were missing some guys. They're getting a few of them back, so they know not to take them lightly at all.
And, yeah, Gustav Nyquist is another guy that they picked up the trade deadline last year. He's no longer around. But when you take a look at Erik Karlsson, Tomas Hertl, and Timo Meier have combined so far for 0 goals and 1 assist, that dam's going to break sometime. And you just hope the Blackhawks do a better job than they did against the Philadelphia Flyers in that game Friday in Prague that we did our last podcast after. And that was puck management issues. And we saw in practice here on Wednesday, you know, they spent the first half of their practice or so, which was about an hour long, working on puck management, getting the puck into the opponent's zone, because that was something they were sorely lacking between faceoffs and turning the puck over. That was too much of a flashback. We've talked about it on our last podcast from last year, and it has to stop quickly here, especially when you have to take advantage of the 7-game homestand, too.
Yeah, we talked a lot about possession, and I think it's going to be all about establishing that, especially against this hungry Sharks team. And yeah, you watched them work on dump-ins a lot the first half of practice, and then the second half of special teams did a lot, so hopefully you see some improvements there as well. In the opener in Prague, I don't think the special teams were too bad. Did they connect on a power play?
Yeah, they did with just like a second left. That was the DeBrincat goal. That's they right. did allow That's right. a power play goal as well.
And I think they were successful in all their kills, right? Or no?
They did allow one power play.
Okay, so I was wrong. But not terrible on special teams, but they did spend a lot of time working on it because you're going to need it heading into the homestand here.
Yeah, the Sharks are just 1-for-17 so far on that power play. But you're talking about improving dumps. It reminded me of what you used to say all the time as we work on our sophomoric humor here. But so we don't have any new news about the Blackhawks other than the fact that, yeah, Connor Murphy is probably going to be back in the lineup as the San Jose Sharks and the heavily bearded Joe Thornton take the ice.
But man with a beard taking the ice during the podcast.
You know who that is. And
Jumbo
Joe is taking the ice. And we'll keep you posted whether there's a Patrick Marleau sighting here as well, because he was just re-signed within the last 24 hours. But you'll be hearing the sounds of a Sharks practice in the background here as we record this podcast. So we mentioned Connor Murphy likely to be back in. Calvin DeHaan still apparently has a problem with that groin injury. And Jeremy Colleton is not going to be announcing the starting goaltender until game day, as he usually does. So if you're listening to this podcast after 10:30 or so on Thursday morning, check our Twitter line, and we'll have the reveal in terms of whether it's going to be Corey Crawford or Robin Leonard in the net. But Scott, let's talk real quickly before we hear from Eric Gustafson about the rest of the NHL here in this opening week. There's always these surprises, and you don't know what the sustainability is going to be, but you have the Edmonton Oilers and Anaheim Ducks at 3-0 so far. Carolina's picking up where they left off at 4-0. They're the lone undefeated team. So Arizona started out 0-2. They're a little bit sluggish out of the gate, and some other central teams as well. Dallas just got their first victory in Washington in overtime on Tuesday night. Winnipeg, which looked left for dead with all their defensive problems, they're 2-2 after opening up with four games out east. So they're in a better situation than I think a lot of people expected, getting a couple of victories. Nashville's looking fairly strong. St. Louis looking fairly strong. Colorado started out 2-0. But, yeah, some of these starts here, the Blackhawks, you know, it almost raises the urgency level when you have teams like Edmonton and Anaheim starting out 3-0.
And you see all these teams with four games, some with just three, but still – the Hawks had played one game, and that says why we're going to have a very busy October here.
Yep. And as we said, this Edmonton team is going to be coming in on Monday. The Winnipeg team we were just talking about will come in on Saturday night, so a whole lot to look forward to. And, you know, that just increases the urgency of this homestand with an Edmonton at 3-0, Winnipeg surviving a little bit better. And one other point here about what we're observing, too. We mentioned Joel Quenneville, as we brought out our bad humor with his references. But they played two games in Florida, and each time I've seen the highlights, Scott, they're still, like, the stands are only half full. So you wonder when the appeal is going to happen for this Florida Panthers team. A lot of excitement over the moves they made and a lot of excitement over Q. But people are enjoying the sunshine, I guess, in Florida more than hockey so far.
They're going to have to build the arena where those retirement communities are so they can just go walk outside or look out their window. If they're not going to go, you know, pay some money and get some seats for the stash, I don't know what's going to get them there.
All right, so coming up in this podcast, you'll hear about the brand-new United Center scoreboard, some of the details about it. We'll hear from Joe Myra, who is the United Center Senior Vice President of Operations and Administration. Scott and I will also talk a little bit about some of the new food options you'll see as Blackhawk fans get to the United Center this year. Obviously, the scoreboard's the big thing, but let's stick to hockey here. Had a chance to catch up with Eric Gustafson. This is actually a couple of weeks ago during training camp, and had a chance to talk to him about, you know, what kind of year he's expecting of himself and how everyone else may expect him to just put up 17 goals and 60 points again. And he said, you'll hear in this interview, you'll hear him say that it even surprised him to a certain extent. So we touch on that, and we touch also here on things he wanted to improve, and that's where we start out, because it's kind of interesting to hear Eric say he had that career year, even though he didn't necessarily feel like he was himself physically. He didn't feel like he was as good as he potentially can be, and that's where we pick up this interview, where he discusses what he worked on most in the off season.
You just look at the guys out there right now, it's quick players, it's good moving puck defenseman in all kind of areas too. But this summer I kind of looked at my I had some trouble before with my knee. Kind of, I don't know if they were bad or I was didn't have enough muscle on them or whatever. I did a lot of single leg squat and trying to stay more stabilized the knee and around the knees. because I felt like, not last year, but a couple years before that, I kind of felt like my skating was not good enough when I was in one skate. I was kind of felt like I was all out of balance or whatever it was. And this offseason, I kind of did a lot of, just like I said before, single squat, trying to build the muscle around the knee so I can move around more quicker and more stabilizer. And when I lose control of the other leg, when I step on one leg, and last year I felt like I was too loose on around my knee and all around it. And this year I'm trying to work around it and trying to stabilize it a little bit more. I feels much better out there now, and figure out who, like, pivots and stuff like that, be more quicker from going backwards to forward and the opposite way, and feels like it's helped a lot, and feels quick out there.
Well, the other day Jeremy said when breaking down pairings or what side guys are stronger on, he said he views you as stronger on the right side now, and you've been playing a lot of that. But I know a couple of years ago when he approached you about that, you said, no way, I can't do it. Do you feel you're as strong or stronger on the right side now yet?
Yeah, I think so. But I think Duncan Keith has helped me a lot to play on the right side. He's just very easy guy to play with. And I don't know, he makes me look better out there, I think. He just gives the puck to me when in a good timing, and when I want the puck, and when I'm skating up and in towards the defensive zone, and I'm coming with a lot of speed, he passing me, so it's he helps me a lot. And it was kind of hard in the beginning, but now it actually feels like this is my strongest side. It was a long time ago I played on the left side, so it's kind of nice in the offensive zone too, you know, and the face off and stuff like that. You have the one time where you see the ice much more. When on the left side, you're always looking down right away instead of going looking DD or whatever you want. When I'm on the right side, I kind of see the play all the time because I have the stick in towards the middle of the ice. So I don't know. It feels like I can move the puck and I can do stuff on the blue end more, and even in my own zone too. And if I get it on the backhand, my head is up, so it's kind of easy to find a simple place and stuff like that.
Well, he challenged you with that a couple of years ago, and so how is that relationship? How is your relationship with Jeremy, just in terms of, and as I guess you can speak for all the guys in the room here, in terms of that communication and, you know, making sure everybody is on the same page, be it individually or as a group?
Well, he was talking to me, and just like I said, he was talking to me, and I what are you going to do? This was a couple of years back, and I was kind of like, you know, when your coach says you're going to play here, you don't say too much. So it was kind of just trying to figure out what route you're going to do in your own zone, what if you're going to take it on the forehand or backhand. That's kind of those small plays you have to figure out what's easier for you, and I think, just like I said before, Dunks has helped me a lot on that. And he's making those easy plays all the time. He doesn't wait till one guy is on me. He always tries to fake the other way and pass it over to me. And that's helped me a lot, because I think it's much easier in the play on the right side. If you get a little time when you get the puck, you can go up in the middle much faster and see the play more.
Well, if I would have told you a couple of years ago you have a 17-goal, 60-point season under your belt, you probably wouldn't have believed it based on, you know, your previous statistics. Does that raise the bar of expectations for you, and can you afford to even think about that too much out there, trying to match what you did last season or surpass it?
Of course you want to match it. I want to do everything I can to help this team win. So, but it's a little bit challenge, but I think it's just a fun challenge too. I never scored 17 goals. I don't think I scored 17 goals in over 3 years or whatever. So, but no, it's a little bit challenging. I think I have a little bit more pressure on me this year than I had last year. So, but it's fun. It's fun. I think I have had this pressure before, but not kind of this one. I think I have had a lot of pressure on me last year and the year before that, but it's another kind of different pressure on me, but I think I managed to handle that too, and I think I can handle this too.
Yeah, scoring goals is fun, I guess. And from last year to this year, what did you see from Adam, a very offensive defenseman? What did you see from Adam Boqvist in terms of his improvement with what you saw of him for the first time last year to where he is this year?
I think he's proved a lot. I think it was a good year down in London, and very skilled guy, good in the locker room, good kid. It feels like I have my little brother here in the locker room. So, but no, it's he's improved in the defensive part. I think he's not the biggest guy out there, but he can skate it. He's good on the skates. He can skate the puck up, and he can go in on those one-on-one battles right now. I think he was a little too soft in the last year, but I think now he showed that he can play in this league, and I think he's ready. Maybe whatever happens here in camp, I think he's going to be a big part of this organization for a long time.
So a little bit there from Erik Gustafsson as the San Jose Sharks continue warming up ahead of their practice here prior to the home opener for the Hawks against the San Jose Sharks. And yes, there is a Patrick Marleau sighting beneath us. So the 40-year-old is back at it, the all-time games played leader, goal-scoring leader, points leader for the San Jose Sharks. Number two pick in 1997 draft. But back to Gustafsson, he picks up where he leaves off in Prague. Two assists in that opening game. But even hear Jeremy Colleton say after Wednesday's practice, he was like everyone else defensively in that contest. Too much time in their own zone. Everyone has to be a little bit sharper. But he knows heading into this contract year and the uncertainty about what his future will be that he needed to up his game. And, yeah, he went through some specific workouts to try and make those improvements.
That's really interesting because one of the things you didn't think was a weakness for him was his skating. And he wants to improve his skating. And I guess for all you young hockey players out there, he specifically talked about his workout where he's doing single leg squats to improve the stability of his knee to be a better skater and have more quickness that way. So I guess it's always good to improve upon your strengths, even something we see Patrick Kane do every year in the offseason seemingly. So yeah, I mean, for him to stay hungry and want to improve is great.
Erica, finally following the workouts that Scott and I do in our offseason.
Pre-podcast workouts.
Exactly. So, and Scott also bringing out his Steve Stone version of the hockey for all you young hockey players out there. So good on you for that. All right. So that's where we stand from an on-ice standpoint. And we're going to get to some of the slapshot questions as well. But before we get to that, let's talk about this new monstrous scoreboard with the guy who was the main brainchild behind it in making it happen. That's Joe Myra, who's the United Center Senior Vice President of Operations and Administration. They brought all the bells and whistles in a media event last week. And so I wanted to talk to Joe about some of the particulars on how they made this happen. This United Center scoreboard, 50 million pixels. It's like watching a television in front of you. 53 feet when it's at its normal length, and 100,000 pounds, two times the previous weight of the old scoreboard, which lasted 13 years. And obviously, the main thing that is the difference from the other one at first sight is the massive size of this scoreboard, and that's where we pick up our conversation with Joe Myra.
It's, you know, the sheer volume and size of the old the scoreboard compared to the old scoreboard. It's about four times the LED coverage that we had before. The other thing is the clarity, color contrast. We've modified our cameras to provide new content. We're striving towards that 4K capability. You know, that's one thing people notice immediately when they see that. I think the how it fits in the arena, the size, the design, the dimensions, and just the overall feel of the board feels really organic, and it complements what's happening on the court. It complements the design of the building, the bowl. That was important to us, to our ownership group. It really provides the same entertainment value anywhere in the arena. You know, if you're sitting on the 300 level or 100 level, club level, suites, wherever that may be on the court, you've got access to all the information. You've got access to video, even more so than you would ever have at other arenas, and definitely more than you had in our old board. I think those are the things that, to me, as a fan and an observer, and in our design group, we try to achieve those goals, and I think we did a pretty good job. You'll be impressed.
What were the challenges in terms of making sure, if someone's in standing room at 300 level, you know, making sure the sight lines with something that big, yeah, what were some of those challenges, and what were the challenges weight-wise, too, to get that thing installed in this building?
A very good question. I'll address the sightline question first. We work with our consultants. We do a number of sightline investigations, sightline tests. We apply that against camera positions, fan perspectives. We work with our internal groups, the Bulls, the Blackhawks, the United Center. We talk about what the pain points were for fans in other locations. We have a lot to get in. We hang a lot from the ceiling, so there's a lot of interference there as well. Mm-hmm. We talk about banners. We put the new audio system in. There's all of that stuff comes together. So, we partner with our consultants. We partner with internal partners. We listen to our fans, and we try to address those things in combination. The other piece, from a structural standpoint, weight, and we also consider what we do outside of Bulls and Blackhawk games as special mm-hmm. events and concerts. So those concerts and our shows are getting larger. They're hanging larger production. We're trying to modify and upgrade our building. It's a 25-year anniversary, so we're working towards modernizing everywhere we can. Work with our local structure engineers to add support connections as well as support members. We hung another about 130 tons of steel in the roof to account for that. So it's been quite a summer, and we did that without shutting down the arena, which is difficult to do. So that's a testament to our operational group and the partners we work with. But look, it's a great product. We've added the capabilities. This now has the dynamic approach where you can change look and feel, which I thought was important. We blended what's happening in the concert and live music production arena and applied that to kind of a traditional, NHL, NBA center scoreboard. I think we kind of found the best of both worlds that our fans will hopefully enjoy.
So when this idea all comes about, there's not like a scoreboard manufacturer that has a catalog and say, this is what, would you like this? I'm sure it's a give and take, and you work off a base of an original idea, and just a conversation begins about what can we do with this? Can we do this? Can we do that?
Yeah, well, you always start with the basics. What do we have to have, right? What would we like to have? Figure out where the gaps are. And then you really want to make it your own. It's just like, these are not off the shelf, like you said. You work with different design groups. The folks internally who have great ideas are creative teams. Sergio and his team, as well as the Bulls and the Blackhawks, they have great ideas of what they would like to do. At our kickoff meeting, I'll share a small story for this project. We had everyone involved in the project from designers, operators, installers, consultants, product manufacturers. There was 45 people in the room. And amongst that was about 22 different groups. So you can imagine all those different resources coming together. That's what it takes to get something like this done with it's a significant project. It's a significant statement. It's going to be a staple to our building for a long time. And I thought that's kind of the answer to your question, but also a pat on the backs of those that did the work to make it happen in a pretty short amount of time.
Was the board on the underbelly of the scoreboard itself, was that part of the original concept? Or once you saw how large it was, did that come a little bit later thinking, all right, well, everyone who's in that lower bowl, the first 5-10 rows, not to mention the players and coaches, they need something too. Was that part of the original plan, though?
Absolutely. So it modified a little bit, but that was one of the basics that we had identified. Every fan has to have a similar experience and similar information. I'll quote one of our internal executives, the fan is sometimes the most uninformed person in the building with all the digital media, at-home broadcast, things like that. So you want to make sure you provide as much content as possible. So we did that, and then we looked at the different sightline challenges with increasing the footprint of the board. The further you go out into the fans outside of center ice or center court, obviously the more challenging the sightlines. So the inner board provided a nice solution for that. We also added square footage for LED capacity. Video stats is also very important for us and our fans. That's another platform and canvas to apply that towards. And at the end of the day, it looks and feels like it should be there. To have nothing there, obviously, was not acceptable for us. And we found it a great opportunity to take care of those folks sitting on the court, on the ice, and even up to about the 10th or 12th row. And they start to transition to the even larger screens. And then we go up to the top row of the building, the 300 level or standing room only. You still have access to all that information, and you're seeing the full board in its entirety, and we're very excited for it.
And in addition to the visual side of things, there are also massive upgrades made in the sound system at the United Center, where it's coming less from the scoreboard in the center and more from all around, more of a surround sound type deal. I don't know if Troy and I are going to have to shout any louder during our pregame show on WGN Radio. We'll just have to find out on Thursday. Now, in addition to the scoreboard, as The Sharks continue working hard, trying to snap out of their 0-4 start here below us. There are new food options. The big one is Stephanie Izard, who has The Girl and the Goat, an award-winning chef there. They're bringing The Little Goat Went to the Taqueria to Section 114 at the United Center. And us media folks had a sampler. I don't know why you didn't make it that day, Scott, but we had a little sampler. And last Thursday, in addition to the scoreboard reveal, and the taco options are absolutely tremendous. And I'm not sure if we're going to see you as much in the press box as we are down in Section 114 during these games.
Well, it's been real hard to focus. I'll probably be all over. I know they're in the 200 level. I think there's new desserts. I'm going to be very busy during the game. But no, I would have loved to have the short rib tacos, the goat empanadas. It pained me not to be at that tasting. I think I was busy. It pained me not to be there. And I'm starving here. We're looking at pictures of food earlier. We're reading all these food items. It's 1:22. I had one protein bar at 8 a.m. This is torture.
So yeah, the options or the offerings are short rib tacos, pulled pork tacos, spicy chicken tacos, veggie tacos, the goat empanadas, and of course avocado dip. And there's other good stuff. Actually, almost right across from The Little Goat Went to the Taqueria at the United Center, honey buttered fried chicken is also an option there. And they're switching up some of their barbecue as well. So enjoy, everybody. There's also something called Mindy's Hot Chocolate.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I think I've had it. I think it's delicious. But I know it's supposed to be very, very good.
Yeah. And it includes a cocktail like Mindy's cocktails as well with Mindy's Hot Chocolate. So everybody, enjoy. While Scott and I are going to try to be focusing on the game, you guys can get up out of your seat and enjoy some of the fantastic food offerings around the United Center this season for Blackhawks hockey. All right, it's that time of our podcast when we hear from you.
Score! Slapshot questions. Tweet your questions to the guys at Boated Tweets and at Scott King Media for your questions to be read on the podcast.
And it's perfectly fitting we do hashtag Slapshots, your questions with Slapshots going on in the background here. That's the way we planned it, folks. So let's go to some of your questions. Hashtag Slapshots. We sent out the invitation to ask us questions on Twitter using that hashtag as we can continue this new phase of our podcast. And through Twitter, we got a couple of questions. Who we got here?
First one from Denise at Play the Dagger. Has the team noticeably grown tighter compared to the start of the season? Probably talking about the chemistry building on the European road trip.
Yeah, they're talking like they do, but that's something that you can't really sense probably until a little bit later on in the season. I would imagine, you know, by the time they got back from Prague, they just wanted to go their own separate ways and put their head on a pillow. But that's kind of the long-term thing. I don't know if you're going to necessarily see it or sense it or feel it short-term, but it is certainly a starting point. Jonathan Toews talked about that in the locker room after Wednesday's practice, that's the expected whole purpose of the trip. Aside from not getting the 2 points that they wanted, that's something that they can come a little bit closer and get to know the guys a little bit off the ice better. So it's kind of organic, I suppose. It's going to have to grow over the course of the season. All right, thanks for your question. Who else we got here?
We got at Tyler Typing, Tyler Cameron. Who's the best player to interview out of the new guys?
Out of the new guys? Well, there's really not a bad hockey interview. it's very, very rare do you find a hockey player. You got your handful that are grumpy here, but the Blackhawks have a good room overall. Calvin DeHaan's a real good talker. Also, I haven't had a chance really to sit with Ryan Carpenter that much, but Zach Smith we had on one of the preseason postgame shows. He's a real good talker as well. So of the new guys, those are the two that jump out. Have you come across any of the others?
You know, I haven't talked to as many of the new guys at practice or like you have, but I will say the segment Robin Leonard gave us at the convention, just the fact that he answers your questions, but he's such an open book, and especially as an advocate for mental health awareness, I think he's been fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with that. I forgot to leave that in because we visited with both Ole Mata and Robin Leonard at the convention, and both of them were very good. And Robin, yeah, another very approachable guy there in the locker room. And a new old guy, Andrew Shaw, isn't bad either. So the fans will be happy to see him once again on Thursday night at the opener. Was it one more we got here?
Yeah, we can do one more from Twitter. Remember, just tweet Chris or I, hashtag Slapshots, and whatever question you have before our podcast. At Kiki's Keys, it's K-I-K-I, at Kiki's Keys. When do you think that Brendan Perlini will get a chance to play?
Well, he and Kirby Dock are the extra guys, have been at practice so far, and I think it's a matter of time for both of those. And I don't know about you, Scott, but you have some of these fans who are thinking, all right, after one game, it's time to shuffle things up. And it's a small sample size so far. But I think, you know, probably within these next three games at home that come fast and furious, the three games in 5 days, if Jeremy doesn't see something he's liking out of a particular player, or he thinks, you know, Perlini in particular might be add something to the table, there's a reason he is out right now, based on what Jeremy and the coaching staff have decided. And we've talked about it since Perlini came here. You see all the potential there. It's just a matter of putting it all together on the ice and getting consistent in his game, because last year he had those 7 goals in 4 games or whatever it was, and then you were searching for that offense a little bit more. And Jeremy, like he says about a lot of guys time and again, it's about what they're doing over 200 feet of ice, and he was probably looking to see more of it and going just through some options to start the season. He thought he had something a little bit better than Perlini.
Yeah, it's about putting it all together for him and finding consistency. We know he can play with an edge. You know he can be a great skilled offensive player just with scoring so many goals in such a little time last year. It's doing it night in and night out. I expect him to get in within 2-3 games, I think, like you said, because they got to play the way Carlton wants them to play. And even when you're the extra guy, all it takes is an injury or the line combination's not showing what the coach wants for them. They'll be back in pretty soon.
Yeah, and the Blackhawks have been, you know, overall fairly good, except for the DeHaan situation and Murphy missing the opener, pretty good injury-wise, and the other guy being Kirby Dock, who looks like he's closer and closer to making his NHL debut. Before we wrap up, you got a buddy who's done a little bit of Blackhawk work that you want to give a shout-out to?
Yeah, thanks. A good friend of mine, Paul Banks, he has a website, sportsbank.net, I believe, but he's a friend of mine. We both wrote for Chicago Now that Blackhawks beat writer Jimmy Greenfield was a community manager for. We all won a softball championship together. But Paul wrote a book called No, I Can't Get You Free Tickets is, I believe, the title. Paul's covered a little bit of everything, college sports, pros. So he was kind enough to send me a copy with a nice little note and some great stuff about being a sports writer in there. I think people would want to know questions you might have, and some Blackhawks stuff in there as well. So check out Paul's book, No, I Can't Get You Free Tickets.
You sure he can't? You can't get me free?
I think you get me free tickets. Okay. I don't know about everyone else.
Well, good luck to Paul on that project. And, yeah, one other note I want to bring up, and that's Dominic Kubalik. I talked to him after that first practice on Monday. Very grateful for that NHL debut in the Czech Republic. Says he was really occupied with family and whatnot, but was fairly happy with his game and how he fit in. But he's most happy that he's back home. And not only is his mother and his girlfriend coming here to Chicago, but also his dog, a Chihuahua named Rocky. So maybe he is going to give Ralph DeBrink dog, if he starts his own Instagram, some run for his money. But just a Chihuahua named Rocky. I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to see it. Yo, Adrian. We want to thank you for your involvement in our hashtag Slapshots questions. We always appreciate the questions and glad to answer them here on the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. Also want to thank our producer, Curtis Koch, as well as Ernie Skatton for his dulcet tones on the podcast, making it that much better. Ernie, thanks a bunch. So again, thanks for listening. And again, we'll come at you again with a new Blackhawks Crazy Podcast coming up after Monday night's game. The Blackhawks will have 3 games under their belt. Finally, the schedule picks up, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about after those first 3 home games. And Hopefully we're talking about a couple, if not all, three Blackhawks victories as well. Follow me on Twitter at BowdenTweets, and you can follow Scott at Scott King Media. From the Fifth Third Arena on Wednesday afternoon with the San Jose Sharks, for Scott King, I'm Chris Bowden. Thanks for listening, everyone.
How about that?
They won it! The Hawks win the Stanley Cup!
Thanks for listening to the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. Tell a friend, subscribe, and join the conversation. And follow the guys on Twitter, at BowdenTweets and at Scott King Media.
That was great!